Okay, good afternoon and welcome to the Digital Pastors London seminar. This is the fifth in the series. Today's speaker, Marco Büffler, who is in the Department of Computer Science in Leipzig, is one of the people who I mentioned at the beginning of the very first seminar, who is running one of our sister seminar series, which is a slightly more general digital humanities seminar series, but connected to this. And as well as those others that I mentioned in the first week, Berlin, Göttingen, and New York, who are also running similar seminars, we've since learned that Boston plans to run one digital pastor seminar as well. So it really is spreading around the world, or at least around Germany and the east coast of the US. So just leaves me to announce that Marco Büffler is going to talk about historical text reuse detection on the Photios Digital Library. And I'll let him explain all of that. Thank you very much, Marco.
Thank you, Gary. First of all, a very, very big thank you to the program committee to have the ability, I think, fourth time in a row to present here, fourth year now, to present here at the Digital Humanities Academy now. And this is one of the reasons why I come always back. I do like this format. Having a presentation, talking with you about what I present, and then going to the park and making it really more visionary talks about that. And I did like the idea so much that about 1.5 years ago, I asked the sponsor for some money for the for a Leipzig version of the humanities. Now this is what Gabby mentioned, and we got it already accepted in October, November, probably December as well. We will have our seminar in Leipzig, and this is really a great pleasure to adapt the DC seminar that you have here for a couple of years, all the four in Leipzig. And I want to talk today about historical text reuse detection. Text reuse detection is maybe a bit very fancy, but I will explain what does it mean. For a very first impression is I will talk about quotation detection, I will talk about paraphrasing, allusions, and even a wider scope, translations or analogies. We have run a couple of tests for about 1 year. When I have spoken last year in July about putting gap correct, putting gaps in papyri, more or less we already was on this building site in collaboration with Greg. One very, very first question was the question that Greg actually asked in 2006, what do you do with a million books? Yeah, and I think this is something as a computer scientist I do ask me. Whenever I do text reuse, it is easier to me to say I make something like Blazers. Yeah, I use text reuse protection in order to detect which politician once more again in Germany plagiarize any other text. I could earn a lot of money with that, but this question seems to me a bit more interesting. I come back to that. The second statement, also from Craig, was in a proposal, we didn't have any native speaker for historical languages like ancient Greek and Latin. So, what can we do with these both? One question, one statement. What can we do with these both? I will come back to both of these in my presentation. First of all, what is text reuse? As mentioned already before, you could say something like text reuse is about quotations, paraphrase, allusions, and all the things. You could say you deal with the cultural heritage. For example, who was the biggest Plato junkie in the ancient history? Yeah, who quoted Plato at most? On the other hand, the same techniques of text reuse detection you can use in order to say who is the biggest guy who made plagiarism. Yeah. And the question to me is, why is historical text reuse detection, this highlighting historical, yeah? Why is historical text reuse detection to us so much more attractive? Very important is to clarify right at the beginning that not only in Greek, but for example in Chinese as well, we have quite often the situation that the authors quoting another author not really say, I have this text from Plato, I do have this text from Confucius, for example. Yeah, quite often it is something like an intellectual arrogance to say, if you know that, that's fine, if not, it's your problem. And at least in Chinese I've read this. And but the question is, If I talk here about historical texts through protection, it would be in many, many cases, from a modern point of view, plagiarism. But I do not want to skip on that. Historical text through protection is for us and of interest, for example, for things like that. It is already well studied. Yeah? Whenever I do talk about historical text through protection, we have those dictionaries and carefully collected several occurrences of quotations or allusions and things like that. So whenever I do talk about historical text reproduction, I do have a high gold standard, the humanities. Yeah, in plagiarism it is easy. You just have to show that a paragraph or sentence is not from a specific author, but self-written, but copied from another author. But in humanities, I do have a quite high gold standard. It's not only about verbs and quotations or things like that. And exactly this, I skipped this here a bit. Exactly this we came aware of when we started during the Aqua project, when we thought about how was the aftermath of Plato. This was a very, very first presentation I gave you at the Digital Humanities Seminar in 2009, I think. And whenever you think about text-driven humanities, you have to think about things like that. This is a brief, just a very brief view to that. If I would bring a full tree, it would have hit on the screen and you could not read that. Yeah. So text-driven, for example, means as well to say, I go to the editions. Yeah. I have my digital library, a couple of editions of the same work. Even this is text-free. So please have this in mind. Text-free not only means to think about quotations and things like that, but all the additional detection. I do actually make some research with Craig and Bruce Robinson from Canada, all the classicists. He makes OCR processing, and quite often you find it would bring both the first additional library and Bruce OCR data together. We have at least a double of overlap there. And what's quite interesting is, for example, some works are split. Yeah, you have two works, and in the text that Bruce is OCRing, there is one work, something like work 1 and work B. So, in this kind of editions, you can observe here. We have, of course, the very close duplicates or near duplicates. That we can identify on a semantical level. We can talk about allusions, paragraphs, but even summaries. Yeah? Translations, of course, as well as analogies. This tree here is something that I presented 2 years ago, I think, with Monica Betty, about incomplete text view. How can we identify text view where the originals are not in? The funny thing is, in each trail, and I'll come back later to this, it's not only a historical problem, yeah? So, let's say, for Monica to travel to fragmentary authors, to say, how can we identify quotations when we do not have the original? Let's say the fragmentary author, the line or something like that. Please have in mind that you can easily adapt this question to a higher level of saying, for example, in an ATM digital library, a modifications, it's the same problem. You have references to other works that are not part of the digital library. Yeah? And this is what I mean here with incomplete text reels. On a broader sense, this is not only something about loss of, but this is very a general question. And for this reason, we could give Monica a contract in as well. If you have this in mind, yeah, this is about what means historical text reels. Yeah? It's not about I have text, I have my plagiarism tool, and I put my text into the plagiarism tool and get any result, and this is worse for humanists. If you want to do text reviews for humanists or historical text reviews, you have to cover maybe not all of these edge types, how do different text packages are linked to each other, but they more than one or two. Historical text reviews is much, much more attractive than just thinking about the links between text packages. Maybe thinking about how can you type different text joints. A very brief overview here. So text view is, for example, also about the battle cross. Probably it's thinking about text views and attitudes about paragraphs and exploitations, you would not have better price in mind. But actually, it's also kind of text fields. Yeah, we have something like sales, so the software, for example, here, Kings Point. Or you have common places, yeah. Common places is maybe not something that you quote on purpose, but it's also the kind of reuse that you do in your daily life. And last but not least, big words as well, but I'm looking for something different. Over the top. Multi-bit units. Yeah. Multi-bit units, whenever you apply text reuse techniques, you have more or less always multi-bit units there. A quick example. To be or not to be. You all know that. Yeah. It's a sequence of function words. Yeah. Whenever you have this, you have two chances. The first is to say, okay, I keep function words in. Then you have this famous saying in your slide as well. You say, the results are too bad, and you kick out the function words. You miss then those multiple units like King Alexander the Great. Very, very a lot of person names or nouns in or something like in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. Yeah. Those kind of syntactical phrases or language units you have always. And it is always a trade-off to say, do you want to have even those very, very common sayings in like to be or not to be, or do you want to kick out those multiple units? This is always a challenge to find the right settings and also your own interests. Actually, I could talk about the motivation why Tolga texture is interesting to us a lot of, but the topic is another one. I just want to give you a motivation. And all these two dimensions mean, on the one hand, how can we type the text chunks? And please have in mind, all these kind of labels for the text chunks have different properties. Better price, very syntactically reused, but very short, 1, 2, maybe 3 words. Yeah. Multi-bit units, also probably in most cases, just a few words. And a password, for example, yeah, the same. Yeah, in military context, of course. And a GNOME, for example, tends to be a bit longer, and say, at least in German, it could be all up to 20 words. Yeah, so with these different properties of the text chunk, you have a lot of diversity in. Yeah, those on the what is your unit, what is your reuse unit, the label here, but also how is it quoted or how is it reused. And that would be late, I'm sorry. And exactly all this brought us to this kind of architecture. So what is quite clear, we can't make any kind of text reuse detection with one tool. You have to say the plagiarism detection tool. But what we need is something completely different. We need a kind of I do have a research question and a framework, a workaround that I can break down easily all my research question up to the smaller subproblem. Six subproblems we have to find. First, or actually there are 7. The level 0 is something like, how do I segmentize my corpus? Means, do I use segmentation, a unique segmentation of entire sentence or verses of the Bible, or do I use a moving window of, let's say, 5 or 6 words that run over the corpus? I come back to this. On the level 2, you have to ask yourself, which kind of preprocessing do I need? This can be in the easiest case to remove diacritics in English, in Arabic and Greek, sorry. This can mean to make everything lowercase, uppercase, things like that, with other easy things. But you can think about lemmatization as well. Normalization in context of to clean variants, historical variants, yeah, different writing styles, spelling errors, yeah, and things like that. All this we can do more or less quite good. We have 5 or 6 different properties you can configure here in order to deal with the text. The very most important thing that I have to give you is, for example, lemmatization. Quite often humanists tell me, yeah, we have to lemmatize the text. But if you do something like text mining or text reuse mining, quite often it is a result that by lemmatization you decrease the quality of your result. A brief example. In 2009, I presented a very long jump of text reuse. Metrai was a part of the third of the form in English. Metrai, the base form. And Metrai occurs in the entire trilogy only 7 times. 6 of them are, it is for sure a quotation, a very verbatim actually. And the 7th, the humanists say, tend to be, but they are not really certain about that. If you make now a lemmatization, you do not have a list text passages Metrai in, but you have Metra. And Metra, with all the inflected versions, occurs 6 or 7,000 times. Yeah? And though the relation between the word, or the inflection of this word, and the reuse is completely noisy. So the 6 or 7,000 occurrences of Metra, the minor or reuse is just something like 1% or 1 promille of the entire reuse. In classification, for example, semantic classification, you can observe quite similar things. Yeah. Featuring. Featuring is something like, what is your human fingerprint? Yeah, I do like, actually you can do the same stuff, although not only with the text, but with human fingerprint. This is my intrinsic interest to the biometrics. And so if you take a picture of your fingerprint, you have the same. Yeah? How do you quantize your fingerprint? You can say you choose big areas or tiny areas. And the same thing you do here. You can use, for example, bicrumb shaming or tree crumb shaming, means you choose a window of 2 words and moving always the window by 1 word again. This means this is typically used, for example, for plagiarism. This is a default setting. Whenever you know nothing about what is in your text, which text root is in your corpus, the bicrumb shaming is always fine. Tree crumb or quattro crumb shaming is very, very cool if you want to detect additions. It's very fast. However, for most of the experience, for the most of the things for humanities, the unicrum approach is the best, means really just working with the words. Yeah, no bicrumbs, no tricrumbs, but words itself or occurrences. Feature selection. Feature selection is something that is very horrible to explain to humanists why this is necessary. And I want to come back to the human fingerprint. Yeah. If I choose my human fingerprint, as it is here, and I use Gabby's fingerprint, so my fingerprint is to my fingerprint quite close, let's say something like 90%, 99%. If I do nothing, if I do not select any features here for my fingerprint, Gabby's fingerprint would say that would be quite similar, let's say something between 50 or 60%. Why? All the rules on the left and the right hand side we have in common. Yeah, but however, they do not describe our human fingerprint. They are not specific for us. And exactly this is a problem. We have to remove them, and in the end, if you look at CSI or NCIS on all this stuff on TV, you typically see if they make a fingerprint detection that just maybe 10, 15, not more than 20 significant points are detected. So this means from a couple of thousand of points on my human fingerprint, I do just collect 10 to 20 features. And they are very specific for my own fingerprint. And if I do not compare my own fingerprint to myself, the exact copy, yeah, 1 week later, to Gabby's fingerprint, my fingerprint keeps similar to my one, but Gabby's fingerprint is not 50 or 60% similar to my fingerprint, but let's say 1 or 2%. Yeah, so the gap between my fingerprint and Gabby's fingerprint is much bigger than just the first one. And last but not least, we are watching us comparing a couple of thousand features versus 10 or 20 features is completely performance issue as well. Means this is sometimes a bit difficult since saying a humanist, we do remove things, is always a black point in most cases. And linking, I will skip here a bit, but just briefly, if we do not have our significant features, we compare feature-wise, let's say the 10 or 20 features of the human fingerprint, and link all the features that have at least one feature in common. And then after that, we can store this by any metric. The easiest thing is to just have a look on the overlap. Let's say we have 2 fingerprints, not the human, but also the textual fingerprint of the reuse unit. Say we have 20 features in there, and if we have 10 features in common, then we have something like a resultant metric of 0.5. How often this metric works perfect in plagiarism or if you make analysis of the Bible, where you compare entire verses. Yeah. However, in ancient Greek history, however, the reuse is quite often just 2 or 3 words. Yeah. And though I will come back to this point later, on the experience, on one slide for experience, what have we learned on the Persian library, we had to skip the here to something new. Post-processing just for completeness. Yeah, at the moment there's nothing implemented yet, but just imagine we have 2 works, for example, the two books of the Bible, the book Mark and the book Luke, and you want to compare how strong is the reuse between these works, then you can make a plot. One axis is book Mark, the y axis is Luke, and then you look for vertical lines. So see how many verses in a sequence are copied. So this is very easy to identify bigger chunks of reuses. Yeah, so this there must be copied something. Yeah, and so having one verse or one reuse unit in common can be success. Can be happen on choice. Yeah, this must not mean something, but having a reuse of a sequence of words, a sequence of reuse units, yeah, there's an intention, there's obviously something copied. And typically this kind of technology is only used in plagiarism detection. Imagine you have a page, yeah, and this is copied from another page, yeah. However, you did not strictly copy the text, but you have paraphrased it, yeah. So you can now go below the text thresholds in order to catch this. Many as possible of the lower similar text passages, but you can then identify a sequence of 10 or 20 sentences for this page. Yeah, you easily can say, oh, this is not my choice, this is on purpose, yeah, even if it is paraphrased. Just think like that. Gabby and Simon should know this image here. I've chosen this in order to make something clear. This is from a big publication 1 or 2 years ago. It should be published more or less soon, yeah? And what can we do now? I have here, just briefly, 12 different authors, yeah? And what I have done is, I segmentized the group. Here the group begins, and here the group ends. And then, by the colors, I measure something like, or I've drawn something like a text reuse temperature. How strongly is a particular passage reused? Yeah. So, yeah. Here, for example, a verb. I can read it actually, but it's not really necessary. And you can here, for example, a verb with just some minor reuses. Yeah. But more or less, it keeps completely black. It keeps ignored. The third here is Plato. Plato, the teenagers of Plato, and you have about this area here. We have a quite hardly word passage, a hotspot, yeah. Whatever happened there, it must be something that happened not by chance. And exactly for this reason, we defined two metrics. The first is the text reuse coverage and the text reuse temperature. Text reuse temperature is identifying the hotspots here, and text reuse temperature, text reuse coverage is about. If I choose a verb like this one here, this has a strong coverage with just a few missing black lines. This can happen, for example, if you have a collection or a list of sayings or nouns that are in the source correct here in Kings, for example. And this is here. And this is, for example, just a important project page. First of all, I want to interrupt a bit and come back to 2 slides. What is e-traces? E-traces is exactly those kind of text reuse detection in 3 different fields. Yeah, the social science institute getting standard for the semantics work from German literature, and we work this collaboration with Craig on the Persian Literature Library. We do have a business partner in interface project, but also on freelancer basis, Monica Berti for the Incapage experience. what are our research questions? What does that look like? And then come jump back to the presentation. The cultural science, again, the cultural science partner works on modern publications of the second half of the 20th century, and they're interested in how is a debate, a political debate between, for example, common theory in the modern publications. They are interested in the sentiment class. Yeah. Whenever they do have a text for you or quotation, they are here with very verbatim quotations. Whenever you have a verbatim quotation, you give either a positive statement, let's say, I do totally agree with the original author, or I do totally disagree with the author. Yeah? You never reuse the modification of just for fun, at least in the graduate scholarly. The German, the Göttingen Center for Literature and the Humanities works on literature texts, so from Renaissance and later. And they're interested in the question of how can we improve to build an online edition. Yeah? Imagine you have a page and you want to build apparatus critical or to build a comment about that. You can now choose the page and say which for the Bible, yeah, which text chunks come from the Bible, yeah, in order to find all the passages in the Bible that are in your page or any other columns. Yeah. And what we want to do here is to speed up the process of building online editions. This is what we are now on this team is doing. And we with the project of the library do actually two things. The first is that we measure the interest that we measure who towards whom and what way. But however, having this done, having the text reuse craft completed, we can do something completely new. Probably you're not aware of that. And exactly this is what I want to talk about. One of the fundamental problems is how do we find information in a mass of data? This was the preface now, and now we come to the real presentation. How do we find relevant information in a mass of data? You have something like the Google. Yeah? You can go to Google and say, for example, you type in Herodotus. You have something like 600,000 hits. Yeah, for quite sure, no one can really have a look on all the 600,000 hits. Yeah, for pretty sure. And the question now is, how do you rank these 600,000 hits? Yeah, Google makes something quite simple, and this is very related to what I presented previously. They say something like that. I do have two notes, something like two web pages, two documents. Yeah, and they are associated in any way. You now can say they are not only associated, but they have a direction. Let's say this document refers to this document. And the web, it looks like that. Yeah, I choose here our e-traders website with some featured sites. So you can say from this site we do a link to the Bible Index, for example, the collaboration partner. And this you all know our formula with the web behind that. But what you can do now is just something like that. Yeah, as more people or more links are lead to your website or to your document, that's more important, must be. Yeah, New York Times, for example, has a couple of 100,000 links to their web page. It must be important. Wikipedia the same. And for this reason, they are ranked high on the Google website, on the Google ranking. It's not about the content, yeah? It's just by the trust other people give you. So they use the hypertextual craft in order to rank the documents. A bit more formula looks like that. Yeah, you have a bunch of documents, there's some bubbles here. And actually, if you look, have a look like here, B has 7 or 6 incoming links from this, and this, and this node. But each, for example, has also 5 or 6 incoming links, more or less the same. But B has a much, much bigger impact than E. And this comes, for example, that C quotes refers to B as well. However, C has a much, much bigger weight. Yeah. And I do skip this a bit here, but this is what is mentioned by Google by the PageRank technique. that Google actually uses in Google Search. And whoever is interested in that, I can explain afterwards a bit more, but I think most of you are humanists, and I just want to give you an impression what my underlying assumption is. Now things become interesting. What is done by Google? Google says, we do weight our documents by the relevance of incoming links, not by content.
Yeah.
This is an example again.
Yeah.
So imagine you have a philosophical text, so I like the draft to be or not to be, you have no content written. But what you can identify that many references to be or not to be are given.
Yeah.
And what about 10 to 15 years ago was widely used as the TF-IDF measure that actually measures something like how important is a word for a document.
Yeah,
nothing of these words would be important for the spread. And the big question now comes, I have to say maybe that there are several attack techniques in order to come up on a higher ranking level with the TF-IDF measure, to use that with this metric. And this was one of the things why Google has developed the PageRank technique in order to be not aware of what has people written on a particular page, but to say if other people link to this page, we do trust them.
Yeah.
And the big question is now on humanities relevant data, let's say through the digital library, for example, let's say any OCR to the meta digital library as well, or whatever. Which of these data have any linked data structure?
No
of them. Yeah. We do not have on a digital library something like on the web with the HTML files, no link structure. We do not have them.
Yeah.
Google Books, for example. Have you ever asked yourself, yeah, knowing how Google Search is really working, how can you search in Google Books? We're quite sure they can't use any PageRank technique.
They do not have a link for that.
And exactly this is a step where we want to start some group. I want to come back to the sixth level just to refresh it. What we have done is we took the current digital libraries, 503 books, that was about a year ago, public available, and we pre-processed and featured these different techniques through the digital library. Maybe two comments. The tool will be available here about the second quarter next year. It's already finished yet, but the lack of the documentation. I have to write the documentation, otherwise I would get, I have to make too much support and people want to use that. And we will make next year as well some teaching courses, full day courses in order to give young scholars as you to trust in humanities the ability how to use this tool. And at the moment we can combine more than 1 million implementations on implementation of the sixth level. What have we done? What are our sites? As said before, we started in July or last summer with this kind of investigations. First of all, we started with background shaming. Background shaming is always the best when you never know what do you really want to measure. Quite 5 months here, we did identify we do not really come up with really good results. Whenever we had a look on the current digital library for the background shaming, we had the problem that the reuse within a verb, for most verbs, is bigger than reuse between different verbs. Yeah, and there must be something wrong. We had a brief look into the data and in Homer, that was quite obviously that it must be coming like a Homer-like language of Homer, but for a police element, it was the same, yeah. And a police element was the verb that had the strongest self-reuse in the entire the digital library. The question was why, and the answer is quite simple. It loved about mathematical expressions. Yeah, given this very formal-like language, yeah, of the mathematical expressions, there was a strong similarity of these packages. So quite obviously, we had to change something. For this reason, we switched from the bicrumb or tricrumb shaming to understand to fingerprint every reused unit, every tech junk, not by bytes, but by words. This process took actually 5 months to understand this. Parallel to this, we had to understand the. This was on the featuring level, level 2, a change on the featuring level. Then you have to understand that the weighting is all or not the best. Whenever you read something about textures, you find probably a reference to closures for sampling or containment measures, and they do something like to matrix scoring between 0 and 1. However, given the fact that texture from the Perseus library is only about 2, or makes most cases about 2 or 3, maybe 4 words, this was really a good measure, as I mentioned before. And for this reason, we skipped the normalized weighting and went to an absolute weighting. Absolute weighting means here that we used word classes for weights. Yeah, we gave nouns and we gave verbs a quite high score, and for example, particular function verbs a very low score. Yeah, and though it's not about frequency. Yeah, whenever you talk about text to use, quite often you have to observe that the really hot keyword for the quotation are not about like kind of like the TF-IDF measure, that they are in a special way significant for the document. Yeah. Imagine whenever you quote something, I do this in my thesis at the beginning of the chapter, so whatever is in this quotation is not about the real topic, it's more what to do with that. And this we have to skip, and really quite interesting observation. Whenever we have a look on text reuse, even if it is just about 2 or 3 words, in much, much more than 90%, we have in this overlap a verb. Yeah? Can you remember what I mentioned previously, the two multi-verb units? King Alexander the Great. It's a sequence of notes, or person names, but we're quite sure there's no verb in it. Yeah, and what you could observe there is that the verb and quotations or in any kind of textual reflection is of a strong importance. And last but not least, this was done earlier this year. We started with something like a fixed a dynamic sentence wise window. It means we took the entire corpus and split it into sentences, whatever the editor has in mind when setting the punctuation. And however we got sentences from shredded size or 50 or 60 size, we are having a problem if you have just 2 or 3 words that are reused in the window is much to big. And for this reason, the result was fine. But though you do not have a real locality. Whenever you have to think about text reuse, the keyword, your fingerprint, the features of your fingerprint must be as close as possible together. For example, I got 2 weeks ago a Google alert for text reuse. And what happens is that there was a person, Sven Reuser, in German, with a separation is a different way of being used, but voice, and a couple of words, let's say 30 or 40 words later, there come text. And Google says, oh, I found reels or voice, the person name, and text, and they have nothing in common, but at least they were the same document. So this I mean here about the locality. Whenever we talk about texture, all the features must as local as possible. And having now a big sequence of sentence and just 2 or 3 words in, we got a lot of noise in, and for this reason we went to a fixed size moving window of choosing the window size of 5. This we have done more or less by for our own element of deeper motivation. We had a look on the distribution on previous side, what is a really good reuse in the first library. Most of them are 2 word reuse, 3 word reuse, 4 word reuse, and coming up to five, in the size of five, we would include already more than 90% of the real. So this was a decision why we came to this quite this small window size. Recently means April last this year, for the version 1.0 for the data, we can cover a recall of about more or less 94%. Measured this on the manually annotations that students did at the period, and the precision is about 93%. What is important? Of course, we could increase the precision, but I think the paper is something like high recall text read detection. It was a title achieved by Craig. And what we did identify for us is we do not need high precise data, but we need a high recall. Yeah. Whenever we collaborate, or at least me as computer scientist, whenever I collaborate with humanists, I do not have to provide precise data, but data that the precise data that at the same time are very, very common to detect humanists, there's a benefit for them. So having what we need, or what I need to do in detection is to provide links that humanists are not aware of. So the high recall is much, much more rigorous than high precision. For this reason, we focus here on a very high recall. Actually, we could increase this recall to up to 98% about. There were also some things that we could improve. Just to give you an impression about the underlying data. One step back. I introduced previously the Google PageRank technique, and what we can do now is on non-linked or non-structured data or non-hyper data with hypertextual data like the web, that we can do something different. We can say, for example, having text reels data or a link between text values by text reels, we can now say something similar. We can say author A equals author B. We have the link. Something like at the news equals Homer. Or a bit more general, not thinking on the author level, but on the work level. How does Aeneas wrote in all his books, the Odyssey or the Iliad? And now we create correctly the hypertextual structure similar like the web links we have on web pages. And what we can do now is we can use this kind of cultural heritage. How does an ancient author, Gail Galen, for example, by his quotations, you can now measure what is the relevance of the particular passages. For this reason, I copied this image here in as well. What Google PageRank always measures is what is the most trustworthy page. This is typically Wikipedia, bigger pages like New York Times, and things like that. But the thing that tries us is, what does it really mean? Yeah, not only having the link between the passages, but what other users are really interested in? In this case, the humanists. Yeah, other humanists are more interested in the high text reels temperature, the clusters, or something like that. Are the humanists interested in documents that have a hardly quoted text passage? Or are the humanists more interested in something like that, in high coverage? In the end, you can say you have, let's say, 1,000 quotations. Yeah, here they are widely spread over the entire document. Here over there, it's just as many on one particular point. And that's the first question that's right there. The second question is, how do we have to score? Google say something like, something with a high score is fine. Yeah, this is true. Yeah, this gives us trust. Probably for students, it's fine to say, for example, this kind of passage of Plato, you have to read. Yeah, whatever. And on the other hand, imagine now you're a very, very experienced girl, someone like Charlotte Boucher. Yeah. And the question now is, if you type now in a word, are you really interested in this passage here? Yeah, or a document that is hardly quoted in the word and exactly in this passage? Would you be interested in that? Probably not. You read this a couple of times already. Yeah, what you as an experienced scholar, you are more interested in things like that, or quite new. Yeah, there are new quotations, but there are things that need to be discovered. Yeah, and exactly this is what is planned for our sub project to make a difference. First, what are the humans interested? Yeah, high coverage or high temperature, or the high score versus the low score. Exactly this is already implemented. By end of this year, it will be integrated in progressive portal. And in 2013, we will explore what the users really choose. Imagine, you have the Google page, yeah? You type in a word, this will be similar. However, we have now six boxes. There are six frames, six windows, where different techniques are scored. And effectively, this is what we do there. We do provide the user, this will be happening in 2013, different scoring and ranking strategies. And in order, now we want to test in which of these boxes the user choose. Just seeing, oh, this is the order, this is the title of the work, and some metadata here. Which of the box particular user would prefer? And in 2013, well, this is it's a complex thing I talk about. In 2013, we are interested to collect from Perseus all the data that users are doing by clicking on particular links, in order to understand what are the users are really interested in. Our hypothesis, just a hypothesis, yeah? Students are interested in high score, yeah? Similar to the reading list, yeah? I assume that a reading list, if you take a reading list in Crete, for example, that they would highly cover things like that, yeah? And on the other hand, experienced scholars are more interested in deep passages that are quite dark and undiscovered. And this is a question that tries us so far. And yeah, again, the version of the data is already done. This is done by July this year. More or less, development needs to be done to integrate it into Perseus. In early next year, you will have exactly this feature on the Perseus digital library available. Back to the initial questions. What do you do with the many books? First of all, we can discover cultural heritage. Yeah, whenever we create something, yeah, we do need any kind of traces, tiny traces of what is important. We do get, we can do measure even right now. Yeah, what is relevant in the fourth or the fifth century to a particular text. Yeah. On the other hand. Yeah, and that is a platform that for our project, we want to do with the text we use something like a cultural heritage of rare patron setting. It means you come from the text, analyzing the text for quotations, and this is interest for the humanists, which how do they are connected, and having this graph done, yeah. And having this graph done, I can do it to come now on the computer side and say, okay, what can we think, what we can learn from this hypertextual graph in order to make something more worth for, let's say, their gender. We do not have any native speakers for ancient Greek text like ancient Greek and Latin. Of course, you could say now, it's fine what you're saying, Mr. Wichler, Marco, but you could do the same with Claude, yeah? We have a couple of 100 students over there, and if they all do make those kinds of textual alignments manually, we do have high quality data on the one hand, and with the Claude we can get quantity data, but the big question is, who of you is a native speaker? Probably no one, yeah? And exactly this is where we want to focus on. We do trust here the native speaker, like Galen, who has spoken the language. And yeah, I think this is what we do. We want to give the relevance that native speaker has given to a particular passage. I do know, I'm a computer scientist, I know, but I do learn Greek and Arabic as well, and more I get familiar with the topics of the humanities, and I do know that quite often there are myths. But as more we go back, the more we can go closer to the original and measure any kind of relevance, as less errors are typically in. What is our mission? Our mission right now is to do the stuff, as I mentioned before, on the Griffith Digital Library. On the way, this week, as I said, we will have this available in 2013. and our waitlist with the recent proposal we have submitted is to bring this kind of techniques to multi-data. Multi-data means a detailed OCR data. I have, in the beginning, I have two slides with the yellow bubbles. Yeah, so the different link type and the different text junk types. Yeah, so it's difficult enough to say how would the text read and under this constraint. But making the same stuff on OCR text, that is the future, or then we get the most text in from OCR process. We have to be aware of how can we make textual analysis or any kind of machine learning on those kind of OCR text. Yeah. And this is what we recently worked on, or we will work on in the next 6 months. We award the proposal came through a couple of days ago, and but this is important for our way in order to think about our vision. Our vision is to think about big national libraries. Libraries like the British Library as well, libraries maybe as well as Google Books, in order to say, we bring you the texture traffic to you, and now having this done, for example, for Google Books even, yeah, then we can think about those kind of ranking strategies given by the textual reuse, given by the cultural heritage that texture actually measures. And this is our vision. I think in end of 2013, early 2014, we will be aware of that, and then we have to see what the libraries say. What I can say for sure, I have some pre talks about that, not through the books, but the libraries, they are highly interested in that. That's typical OCR, typical standard information retrieval techniques have some very serious benefits. This is my last slide, actually, to the presentation itself. But I want to have two announcements. So the humanity seminar, as mentioned by Gabby, is already closed. Deadline was June 22nd. But given the fact that a lot of you are very, very young scholars and researchers, I want to very encourage you to submit a proposal for our Innovation Award. Deadline is in about a month. And if you have any other students that have something very, very brilliant, yeah, very, very smart, do encourage them to submit something. You can get your 1,000 euro, yeah, including a presentation in the e-humanities seminar. And what we're interested in here is to give young scholars, young researchers the opportunity to show what smart idea they have. Of course, we do not expect, yeah, this would be stupid, to say you have something finished, yeah. It doesn't make sense to say we want to have the young scholars on the left-hand side and say we have something finished. This is stupid, yeah. But we want to give you the opportunity to give you HANA or to give you something for your CV, to prove your CV for the things you are doing, yeah. You do not expect finished things. This is very, very important, but this is one of the bullet points we have on the call. We have to clearly say where do we exactly stand in the process of your research and what are your next steps. So we want to identify you, are you on a good way, even if it's not quite early on this step. Yeah, good, a great idea, maybe some things that you already have done with that can really can judge this, and this is actually what we want to do. And it must be the overlap between computer science and humanities, or humanities with any kind of IT. Yeah, this is what we are interested in. Last but not least, thank you for your attention. This is our project website, Prozis, I think most of you you should be aware of. And last but not least, in November last year, we founded the Google group here about historical text reels. It's a very, very nice playground for all the scholars in humanities, the researcher in computer science, yeah, the digital humanist. What my interest is with the Google group is to bring all the guys together. About last summer, until up to November last year, I was asked maybe once a week what have we done here, or can you recommend me someone who has done the text-driven Latin, and always I have written a written introduction, and actually this sucked a bit, yeah? And it was like a repeater, yeah, connecting to people. And what my interest was with this Google group is to connect all these persons, go to this mailing list, and talk to each other. Yeah, at the moment we are 45 up to 50 persons on the list. It's a low traffic list, but it's these kind of both scholars, computer scientists, and who are interested in topic. Yeah, and thank you for your attention. I do have some backup slides, but I just had to look for. Questions.
Thank you. Question about your research question.
Yes.
Slide, three or four slides back, where you were talking about the high score, low score, the temperature and coverage.
Yep.
And
this one.
I'm relatively happy with your discussion of the relevance side of things, although I think it's maybe a little bit more complicated than just some people are interested in high score and some people in low score, but yeah, depending on your research strategy, there may be combinations of that. But I wonder if you could say a little bit more about temperature and coverage, because I just looking at these examples of these texts up there, the one you said was the Timaeus.
Yeah.
Which had that hotspot in it.
Yeah.
And the other one, I don't remember what the text was, but it was pretty...
I think it was Celsius.
Okay, but sort of quoted pretty much throughout fairly smoothly. And I couldn't really quite decide. I mean, I can see why I might be more interested in high scoring and low scoring texts for that. But I couldn't quite decide what the significance of a text with a hotspot as opposed to a text with fairly smooth coverage might be. So
that's an interesting question. The result could be, it does not matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. But at least we have to take it into account. Yeah. The result could be that this dimension make a difference between coverage and temperature doesn't matter, but to just do that, just say we have here 1,000 units of income. Yeah, and understand the document as a whole, and keep out completely the temperature max. Please understand this max here just for a visual representation, otherwise it would be too difficult to explain what is coverage and temperature, what's behind it. As a computer scientist, I would express it actually as a mathematical expression. But I think it's probably the wrong way to do this. Yeah. Yeah. And it's an excellent question. It can be. It's really that we have the fixed widgets where we have different ranking strategies. One is the standard TF-IDF stuff.
Yeah.
One is the Google PageRank. It's our two baselines. And the other two are the text reuse temperature with the high score and the low score, or the text reuse coverage with the low and the high score as well. And the result could be evenly, as you said, that the first dimension does not make sense, or that it does not make really a difference, and we are just more interested in the low and the high score. What you said as well, what we have in the background, yeah, actually, I didn't want to say this right now, but when you use Google Search, for example, yeah, they're quite often the same problem, yeah. If you're new to a field, yeah, for example, I'm interested in dependency parameters, yeah, or in textual criticism, keep out the computer science stuff. I'm interested as a computer scientist with textual criticism, yeah. I'm quite happy with the Wikipedia article, yeah, this is exactly the level I understand. However, if I more deal with this stuff, yeah, about my skills, I'm not interested in the more general text, but in the very specific text. And one result I do expect actually is that it's not only about students and professors, or it is more just the fancy stuff, how to explain, but to have in background all the systems that traces your experience on a particular field. And whenever you seem to be quite new to the system, then you'll get more of a high score things, and if you doesn't know that you have already read a couple of documents for this, then you go down to a low score. This is a learning system. This is what I have in mind.
Yeah.
But this is a hypothesis. So for this, we have to show that the high score has to be up before.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it would be difficult. And what we do as well, as I talked with Craig about as well, all of this kind of work would not make sense if we do not have any metadata about the user. Yeah. And if all of the plan, all of other building sites, to collect some metadata if Europe wants, yeah, for academic research, to collect some metadata about gender, where the users come from, or we could identify by application as well, but it's more federal to ask this, gender, yeah. Whenever, quite often, you identify and any kind of text mining with gender plays quite a important role. Yeah, this could be, for example, also something that we had completely not in mind here. Yeah, a third parameter could be about sentiments. Yeah, sentiments, whenever we quote someone about positive or negative reflection of something earlier, yeah, how does it reflect there as well? Well, there are probably some hidden parameters that are not on the slide yet. But you're totally right. If we do need this, it's an open issue. Yeah, this is the research, and this is what I mentioned at the end of this slide. Actually, we are talking about a quite complex system, and we cannot really say this is right and this is wrong, but we have to build the black box with the six widgets, and then we need to trace a year or half a year, couple of months, what does the users and periodic decide in order to get some statistics for what is right and what is wrong. And it's a user decision. It's not what we do measure with decision and recall, yeah, but it's a user decision. Yeah, we do, we have to be in control about that. And the crazy thing would be if we come to the point that the TFI gets the best. What would be the worst case? So then I've done everything wrong. But it's research.
Marco, just be clear, Gabby hasn't seen that before, but from the big volume of Stuart and myself.
Okay, I'm sorry.
He was assuming you
I assumed that.
Before, but it's in the Stuart chapter, and so yeah, I've seen it before, and I've read it before. Could you just say a little bit more about the how you're going to do the data collection and the user data collection from the person? So you're going to be analyzing the way in which users access material.
What do you mean by users? In relation to what we discussed this?
Yeah, what you were saying earlier, but it's the final stage.
Yeah.
Using the type of analysis on users of first year?
Yeah, exactly.
How are you going to be collecting that data? Can you just say a little bit about that?
Sure. I'm sorry. Got a call, sorry. Probably I should have prepared a mock-up for this. You type in, for many research search engines here, a word or a phrase, something like that, yeah? And then you get not the results or data set as of Google, yeah? But we do provide something like a widget system, yeah? Here you type in your word, press go, and then we give you a frame of six windows, yeah? We tested it, it fits on the screen, yeah? Mm-hmm. And all these windows are labeled by colors, yeah? Cream, yellow, blue, but they are not labeled, and this is all the frequent stuff, this is the non-frequent stuff. Yeah, this we completely will not write it, otherwise we already wrote an opinion about that. Yeah, we have just worked with the colors, yeah, no titles, and all the widgets are replaced by every request in a different way. Yeah, quite often you could assume that users click typically in the first frame here. Yeah, in order to avoid things like that, yeah, all the windows are changed. And then we tracing which of these six windows the user is choosing. Yeah, it's not about the entire link that the user trusted. For example, here then the list of results, let's say the top 10, and then we have a button show me all. Yeah, it's about the frame that you're choosing. Yeah, that is our interest. And this is all traced for we get a cookie, yeah. And given the cookie, we do collect some metadata. Yeah. Is that fine for you?
Mm. Yeah, I just in my head I was just looking at the first year site and I was wondering how you do it. This is a widget you've got plugged into the site.
This is something that is that comes in. This is something that comes in, and let me go some slides back to give the guys who is will do that the honor. This is exactly the interface, the business partner. Yeah. This is a funny thing. I do not know if this happens at any time before, but we have here an e-humanities project between computer science and the humanities with a quite strong focus on one of the most traditional borders in the humanities, Perseus, yeah, and we can bring in a business partner as well. Yeah, and this probably like the idea. And yeah. So actually exactly these guys will do work with interface. Maybe I should mention that I'm a computer scientist, I'm interested in building mining technologies and machine learning and things like that, but I have completely no interest in building user interfaces. Yeah. And we're from the Latin language processing group, and all the guys that we that grow up on our chair have the same ability. Yeah. And they completely dislike to make a user interface. And for this reason, we asked a business partner who is in the field of semantic search engines like 50 years, and they do have to be aware about usability and user interfaces. So that is the reason why we got this money accepted from the sponsor. Yeah.
Any other questions or
possibilities? The different forms of words.
Yeah.
So if you were to think of scholarship, you start off with a lot of communication at the beginning of the scholarship, they were not communicating. How would you want that? I wondered, I think that would be a bit of the capacity of being bigger than the dancers and the kind of dancers she's doing. I wonder if a diagram or a circle and then the proportions.
Yeah.
Rather than the beginning.
It's more about a representation, yeah. That's not right. We could think about that, but then the question is, what are the x dimensions? So if you put the circle, then what are the axes of this dimension? I've never thought about that, but it might be a good thing to think about what type of position at least to get accepted, yeah. I have some backup slides just for questions, and one of these is how do we get acceptance from the humanists? Yeah, maybe those kind of visualization or diagrams would strongly help to get acceptance. Yeah, I do know that many humanists completely dislike any kind of text mining when they do not know what happens in the black box. Yeah, you put text in and something comes out, and you either you like it or you dislike it. Yeah. And most humanists completely dislike it, then they do not know what happens inside. Even computer scientists do quite often do not know what happens inside. Yeah. So whenever you have something like PLSA or LSA techniques, yeah. So believe me, there are assumptions in there completely freaky, but sometimes the result of pimps and pimps until they are fine and then appear with regression. Yeah. Believe me, acceptance is quite important, and whenever you have any kind of suggestion what could be the access for those kind of visualization, I would be very, very happy to about that. Regarding to this, I don't know, my laptop is so slow. There's a significant delay. This is what I mentioned, yeah. Maybe some slides about how do you get acceptance, yeah. This is part of the added paradigm for successful humanities project, at least something like SWOT analysis or waterfalls and proper model in project management. And what we did identify is something like that, yeah. The computer scientists put some stuff into the black box, the monster, yeah, and the humanists get something out of the links and could be put on a text reader's graph, and they have to like it or dislike. In most cases, this will go wrong. Yeah, and this is more like for computer scientists to make computer scientists aware of that. Yeah, if you now move by 90 degrees to the perspective of the humanities, It's easy to understand. If you just see a big black box, even as computer scientist, I would not like that. Yeah? And what we have done now, this is already existent, maybe this already answers your question here. Yeah? We want to make it a bit more visible what happens inside. Yeah? Putting the text in, yeah, the presentation, what happens in the background under the data you get that visible. There are two things about that. First, any kind of transparency is always good to accept it. The second thing is, even we as the computer scientists can use it quite easily. The text we use, the data, comes from a thing that we typically use in computer science for development. Yeah? Whenever you use a framework like Eclipse or NetBeans for coding Java or things like that, you do have a debug mode. Yeah? It means a small window opens and you can see which variable has which state. Yeah? So you can go line by line through your code and you see what exactly goes something wrong. Yeah, and exactly this is the idea behind the text we use debugger, to make it transparent what happens in background, yeah, and to have a look on what happens on the particular levels. Given the fact that we have separated the stuff to the levels, I just quickly jump over the text here. We can now say I choose the Bible over there. It's not really fancy, the stylish user interface, but at least it is something that it's worth to trace what happens in the background. Yeah? We choose the Bible, I choose near the word God. It's about the Bible corpus. God seems to me the most obvious term to look in the Bible for. And if I trace now, for example, the first hit that the first person in chapter 1 in Genesis, in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth. I press now trace. Then I see what happens in the pre-processing. I know the string we have to give and replace it a bit quite technically, but what this is describing is that we do make everything lowercase, and we have interpretation in, and we do already have here a step already enabled. Yeah? And what you can see, for example, here is the beginning is the place to begin. Maybe it looks like that, but actually it works quite well. Yeah, but it's important to for the acceptance. What you can see now is the board here, the button correct, then this is activated, and then you can type in your own pre-processing. Yeah. What we are interested in is not only we do rule this engine, yeah, but we want you as users to say, oh, here's something wrong. I do know, especially in morphology, yeah. And humanity in a long period, yeah, and there's no tool that really covers all the morphological analysis over a couple of centuries, yeah. In English, here at the time we had some troubles with the archaic English, quite old one. All the morphological tools we had couldn't deal with that. You can add all the comments on the featuring. Ah, perfect. Now you can see what a bytecode training is, yeah. It's perfect. I should have it in the presentation as well. So the pre-process standard is this one. Bytecode chaining now means in the beginning, begin dots, dot create. This is what bytecode chaining is. This is what happens if you choose bytecode chaining. Over here, you can select all the strategies that does make sense. And this is very unspectacular. This is a bit more interest. If you now say, and it's a bit small maybe, you now can say here, of all the features that we have chosen, these are not selected, they are picked out, and these keys are part of the fingerprint. Yeah? The first thing that we can learn from this analyzer is what is the feature density we need? Yeah? It means we have X features. How many of these features we do need in order to identify the right fingerprints? It's not about the process, but about the fiber corpus. And here we have a small statistics in the, it's never used by the elector, it's never used by the users, and this is more general statistics. In the occurred 300 times, 300,000 times in the corpus, 270,000 times it was selected, and so on and so on. You can make a decision on, you can drag and drop it as you like, you have your trust in, that you say this is cool and this is not cool, and I jumped over the linking step, and then you get here the result of the same group, in this case for the upper Bible versions. Here, for example, heavens, there's a heaven, and from below, you have the creator preparing, and at the beginning of God's preparing, or God made something. You can say, no, if you dislike that. Yeah. And what we do want to collect here as well is, it's like the back mode in computer science. Yeah. People do want to have an interaction with you at the universe. My assumption, at least I hope, is, that we get a bit more acceptance for those kind of mining techniques, not only having a look on the output, but also to understand what happens in the background, and the feedback of the potential user, the humanist, is very important to us in order to know on which level we have to change what, and what are even maybe just slightly parameters we have to change. This is maybe also, I just mentioned this, and this is maybe also one of the things for the acceptance. But if you have good ideas for the circle stuff, I'm very interested in that.
Any other?
I have a comment from my own.
I have a very quick question.
Right one. Yeah, I'm connected. The recent state of our data are though that we have quite good results, but there are also some minor things in, like if you go down to 2 or 3 word reuse, it's sometimes quite difficult to make a distinction between what is a reuse on purpose, for example, and what is, for example, just a concurrence, yeah, like buttermilk, yeah, and this is quite difficult, and in the data we have, and now, for this reason, the profession was just on about 73%, or something like that. Why the score is quite low is that we have some language reuse and like very obvious concurrences. But this is a side effect if you go down up to 2 or 3 word reuse. So it's quite difficult, or extremely challenging to make a separation of that. To be frank with you, I just stay in this. This is what we recently are working on to kick these kind of language reuse out.
We thank Dr. One more time, and can turn off the microphone and ask all those questions you didn't want to work.